welcome to this podcast episode of 5 Feet Away. My name is Ellis Orozco, and I'm going to be your host today as we talk to licensed professional counselor Jenna Mountain about anxiety and the Christian life. And so, Jenna, thanks for being here, and let's just begin with you telling us a little bit about yourself, what you do.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I am an LPC in the state of Texas. I am also a certified sex therapist through the American Board of Christian Sex Therapists, an EMDR trained therapist. I work a great deal of trauma. I am a Red Raider. Earned my master's in counseling from Dallas Baptist University, and I'm currently a PhD candidate at Texas A&M University in Commerce.
Okay, awesome. And where do you do your counseling ministry? Where's that work out of?
Yeah, so I have the joy of working with you guys. I am the co-founder and the counseling director of the Counseling Center at First Baptist Richardson, which has been an honor and a joy. I work with 5 very talented counselors with a variety of specialties, and our goal and hope is to play our role in God's restoration process in the lives of people.
Yeah, well, we're lucky to have you, and we're just so glad that you're a part of the ministry here at First Richardson. So we're talking about anxiety, and I've been writing about that in my blog, about fear and anxiety. We hear a lot of words on around this idea. One is we hear the word anxiety attack. We hear about anxiety disorders. And so what do those words mean, and is there a difference between an anxiety attack and an anxiety disorder?
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are digging into this topic. I don't think it's as well understood as we think it is. So on a basic level, one refers to a specific moment, like the anxiety attack, and the other refers to a diagnosis that would be indicative of more than just one moment or a single incident. The truth is we have a lot of casual cultural language around this topic and these ideas that don't necessarily represent the actual terms and definitions. I think it'd be helpful to also define fear and anxiety, if we're going to get into it, because they are qualitatively different and normal to experience. We all have these moments. So fear is an emotional response to a real or perceived imminent threat. So it tells us that our basic needs are in danger, and it gives us the energy to do something about it, to either run or protect yourself, which is where we get those ideas of flight or fight.
Right. So in that sense, fear is a good thing. It helps you.
Yeah, it protects us. It's a part of the God-given alarm system of our emotions. It tells us about the world around us and what's happening and what we might need to do as a response. Yeah, it's a good thing. Whereas anxiety is the anticipation of a future threat. So you're not currently staring in the face of a situation, but you are on guard that this threat might be coming towards you. So it's a little bit different. Fear is more, this is what is, I'm in danger right now, this is happening. Anxiety is the anticipation of something coming at you. But maybe it's real, maybe it's not. Maybe we something it's based on.
So anxiety is all those things that I worry about that actually a lot of them never even wind up happening.
It very well may be the case.
Okay.
Whereas an anxiety attack, that's not actually an officially recognized clinical term. Now, if you were sitting in my office, I would absolutely sit with you in that and have you describe that. I do that with clients all the time, and it is a part of the language that we used. Most people use this phrase to describe the physiological symptoms, the symptoms of the body of when anxiety overwhelms us. They would say that it's hard to cope as they normally would in this moment with these feelings of anxiety. So much more intense episode of anxiety in any given moment.
I've known people who've had those kind of like in intense situations, or maybe when you're thinking about something, maybe there's a lot of angst about some event that's coming up, and you can feel a lot of those things. So that's an anxiety attack or a panic attack, usually just a kind of one-time thing. But what about anxiety disorder? So what is the best way to overcome this idea of an anxiety disorder?
So there are a lot of different types of anxiety disorders. That is actually a whole section in our diagnostic manual. So by definition, it means that you're just struggling with excessive fear and or anxiety, but depending on the type of situation that it might be in response to or the behaviors that a person has in response to that anxiety disorder is going to tell us which specific anxiety disorder this person may be struggling with. So there is more than one.
Okay.
And a lot of times that tells us a lot about what the person is scared of, where the root of this problem may be.
Right.
So there's more than one is kind of your big general answer.
Sure. Yeah. It's more complicated than just diagnosing one thing, kind of like one size fits all. A question that I get a lot from people in my church who are struggling with this, maybe not themselves, but with their children. And it seems to me like this is just happening a lot, and I don't know if I'm just noticing it more, but I know kids are under a lot today with the advances in technology, with social media. They're just so connected to every kind of any little stimuli that's all around them. They seem to be really connected to that stuff. And so the question I get a lot is, how can I help my child overcome his or her issue with anxiety?
So there's a couple different questions in that, so I'm going to touch on them separately.
Sure.
First is that we've got to acknowledge that children are little humans, so their brains are in some ways like ours as adults, but in other ways they are very different. The brain doesn't finish developing until the age of 25. So
I'm noticing that. Yeah. I'm noticing that with my kids.
No disrespect to young adults. I know that we're officially by law adults at 18, but from 0 to 25, the brain is changing and going through many different developmental stages. So because of that, what anxiety may look like for an adult is going to look very different for a child. And sometimes that's the challenge. We look at our children and we're looking at their behaviors and we're interpreting them through the lens of, oh, when an adult would do that, this is what this means, when that's not necessarily the case for them.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I don't specialize in working with children. I have some very talented people on my staff that do. But children's brains work differently than ours, and they need a different approach to healing than ours. They heal through play. They heal through activity.
Yeah.
The parts of their brain that would lean more into words and do more classic talk therapy and counseling is not fully developed yet. So they need to work out whatever's going on for them in a different modality than what I would do with another adult. And so part of what we can do as good parents is realize that we've got to meet our children where they are at developmentally, that they need a developmentally appropriate approach to healing. And a lot of times that is going to be play therapy.
Sure. Yeah, that's just fascinating to me, the way the children's brains work, and they're like little sponges and they're taking it all in. But I'm sure that they have this ability to take things in much more in than even we do, but the processing of it is just not there yet.
It's
they just
different.
Can't process it in. That's right.
It's different. They live in their right brains a whole lot more than we do. We like to live in our left brain a lot as adults that use that that rational part of the brain, the reasoning part of the brain.
Yeah.
And they don't use that as much. It's coming online. It's developing, but it's not the strongest tool in their toolbox. The other thing that you mentioned, you touched on technology, and I think this is important to note. Technology is so rapidly advancing.
Mm-hmm.
I have so much empathy for parents today because we cannot look back at what we've learned, quote unquote, and learn from those lessons, because we don't have another generation that's been through what we've been through with kids. So raising kids with technology, where to put the boundaries down, raising
right.
kids with this advancement of information and expectations to perform with that information, right? Like, so what does it look like to be academically successful? What does it look like to be a successful contributing member of society? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on kids today that wasn't there, and we really don't have a model to look back on and reflect and try to learn from. We're kind of all learning together, both parent and kids. So this is a new category of challenge that to some degree we're all learning together.
Yeah, and that's a really encouraging word to me, because in a sense we're pioneering something as a generation. We're pioneering this kind of raising kids in this uber connected world. And so we're going to make mistakes, and we're just trying to figure it out together. That's awesome. Well, let's shift just a little bit, and because I'm a theologian, I'm a pastor, and one of the questions I get a lot is from people, especially who were kind of raised in churches that were kind of shame-based churches or churches that were very kind of legalistic, and they see all these kind of these passages in Scripture that say, don't be afraid and do not be anxious and all that kind of thing. And so I guess my question is, if the Bible says all that, am I being a bad Christian because I deal with anxiety, maybe even on a daily basis? Is that something that makes me a bad Christian? So just wanted to see what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and you and I have had the joy of talking shop around this, and I love that you do come from more of the biblical scholar and theologian piece, whereas I come from more of the mental health training, but we work as a team in the body of Christ to serve people who need to heal. I feel pretty confident in saying that God doesn't want anxiety for his people,
sure.
Right? Like that wouldn't be his desire for them. Not being the theologian, I'm going to try to stay in my lane. And so some of the questions that I would ask, and this does come up in my office a lot, is are we really understanding the heart and the original definitions of the word anxious and fear in the text? And I would not be the expert in walking someone through that. I think sometimes, though, based on my limited training, we're taking this out of context. We're kind of, that's not the heart of those scriptures, because we can look at other passages and know that emotions were commanded, that they were good, that Jesus experienced them. And so on a very basic level, when scripture uses that term, I just want to be careful that we're on the same page.
Sure.
So with that said, here's kind of my answer to the question. Sin shows up in multiple ways in a person's life. You have personal sin, you have the sin that's done against you by another person, and then you have that sin that's manifested in the brokenness of our bodies and how the world works. My body doesn't work the way God intended it to before the fall. Like, I could give you a litany of things that I wish worked better about my physical body.
The older I get, the more true that becomes. Right? It's just not doing what it used to do, yeah.
So I think that, sometimes this passage of, be anxious for nothing is sometimes used to challenge only personal sin of worrying. And there's some good spiritual growth that needs to happen in that area sometimes. Sometimes we do need to be pushed to trust God more, lean into his provision, know that he wants for our good, even in challenging situations. So I don't want to lose sight of that. But I also believe that he gave us fear to protect us. It's a part of that God-given wiring in the body that is meant to be there. So I don't necessarily want someone to turn that off because they think it's a sin. And I don't want them to turn that off because they're pursuing being more godly.
Right.
And I've heard that explanation before. God tells us to wrestle with our faith in fear and trembling. So there's these biblical places that we can look for where fear is good. And so what I want in our maturity or pursuit of maturity is to show concern and uneasiness, which at the root is fear,
right,
about challenges or choices that we face in our life that should be concerning to us, that should make us uneasy. It's not a simple answer, though. I do think that as someone that works a great deal with trauma, we also need to understand the brain. I've tried, to explain on a high level historically to people that our brain can get stuck when we've had terrible experiences.
Sure.
Some that classically fall in that, definition of trauma, and some of them are just bad growing up experiences. They're very hurtful.
Right.
And the brain and body are in a feedback loop all the time. And so when that gets thrown off, because our bodies don't work the way they were intended to in Eden, right?
Right.
You can get stuck with anxiety, and it's not exactly a spiritual issue, even though I would still say it's rooted in sin, right?
Like, sure. Well,
it gets back to that idea, but it's maybe not necessarily personal sin.
Right. Yeah. It's more the idea that we're all broken. We all deal with our things. And so for some people, it may be anxiety. For me, it's, something else. And, but we're all kind of dealing with it. It doesn't make me a bad person or a sinful person necessarily, other than in the broad sense that we're all sinners. So it just doesn't really make me any worse or any better than someone else.
Yeah, I would say that because God doesn't want anxiety for his people, ultimately, that when you are aware that this is what you're struggling with, instead of getting really honed in too quickly on, is it personal sin? Is it this sin? Just to know that that's a signal that in some fashion, healing needs to be pursued. Maybe we don't know what it is yet, but it is a warning flag that, hey, something's off.
Right. Yeah, I don't know anyone who deals with anxiety on a consistent basis who doesn't say, I want to get better. Mm-hmm. I want to get better at coping. I want to get better at dealing with this. They all recognize I don't like feeling this way, and I want to feel better about myself and about my future and about the situation. But sometimes it's just really, really hard. And telling someone, oh, well, just have more faith, or just go pray about it, or something like that, that just doesn't work for everyone. I think they need more. And sometimes it is an issue of really getting some good counseling and working through those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, there's kind of another side to this, I think, that some people deal with or struggle with. And that is the idea that if I feel like I'm like failing God somehow, some people struggling with anxiety disorder maybe start to feel like there's something wrong with them, that they're weak-minded or maybe mentally deficient or less intelligent even. I mean, you've worked with a lot of people who deal with this kind of thing. Do you see, are people who struggle with anxiety disorder weak-minded, mentally deficient, or less intelligent than others?
No. According to everything we talked about today, a lot of people struggle with anxiety, got to that place with a good reason. Either something happened and there's a wound in there that's causing it, or, you know, they're anxious about something that they've lived and that keeps showing up in their lives, or, you know, maybe there is some other reason, whatever it is. The big question is, what are they willing to do to start walking out of it? I definitely don't think it's because of a lack of intelligence. I've had several cases where it's actually very high intelligence that contributes to a factor, because they're so stinking smart.
Right. Yeah.
And
they overthink everything.
Yeah,
right?
Really smart people can be anxious. So it's definitely not being weak-minded or for a lack of intelligence. In fact, sometimes people who are incredibly intelligent would prefer to think themselves out of it, but emotions don't live in the left part of the brain where we do think and rationalize and analyze. Emotions live in the right part of the brain. And so sometimes the challenge is allowing yourself to live on the other side of your noggin long enough to do some healing. So
that makes sense.
Yeah,
that
so it's definitely not some indication of deficiency in some way. It is a good, again, red flag that there's something that needs to be addressed, but it's not a shortcoming of the person.
Right. Good. That's important to understand. That's important for all of us to understand, whether you're dealing with it yourself, or maybe you have a loved one who's dealing with it, a child who's dealing with it. It's really important for you to understand that that is not a reflection of anything really about them personally. Really one last thing. For the person who is listening to this and saying, I need help. Anxiety is controlling my life. I recognize that. I don't know what to do about it. What can I do to get rid of it and get rid of its symptoms, or to make myself better?
Yeah. So the short answer is it depends,
right?
Which is
that's
probably
always your answer, Jenna.
And I would say, like, I want to be fair to the field that I work in. There'd be a lot of different answers out there that would come from mental health professionals.
Sure.
I think that anxiety can be the result of a lot of different causes, with a lot of different variations from case to case. In general, I would encourage someone to start considering what it would be like to choose them. To choose oneself for a season in order to heal. I have this conversation with almost every single client that I work with, because they get into counseling. They're definitely motivated by a desire for relief. And then they realize how much it's going to cost to get there. And they are having to sit down and make a choice that I'm going to have to choose me for a season to put my time and my resources and my energy into healing. Maybe I can't participate in as much. Maybe I, you know, can't do this like I want to, because I don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to live like this anymore. And so it really is a choice to prioritize healing. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard decision at times. But that has to be their choice. And so the first step is to really think about if they're willing to make that choice, because it's not going to happen accidentally. You're not just going to trip and fall into healing and find yourself on the other side of this.
Why doesn't it work like that? It doesn't work like that.
If you're willing, if someone is willing to pursue this and put the time and effort into it, find a good counselor, That's a good place to start. Find some good, healthy, gospel-centered community. Even the best counselor in the world cannot replace the community that you need in order to heal. Healing doesn't happen in isolation. I got to listen to Dr. Thompson, who's the author of Soul of Shame, speak on this. He said, brains heal with other brains.
That's good.
And God made it that way. And so we need other brains to interact with and to heal inside of community. So find some good, healthy, gospel-centered community. Start the journey and give yourself permission to take it. And by that I mean, like, it's one step at a time. You don't start the journey and then find yourself at the finish line. It's more of a marathon than a sprint sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so it's enjoying the walk toward healing and into some tough places at times. And so you have to give yourself permission to take the time you need. But I do think it's worth it.
Absolutely. That's an awesome word. And really at some point, you know, when you deal with this stuff and you just put it off and put it off, at some point your body is going to tell you, you have to stop and deal with this. At some point, you're going to have to take the time, invest the time and the resources to do this. And so the best time, it seems, the best time is now before your body says, yeah, hey, it's time, right?
And yeah. You know, coping is very important and helpful. But I tell my clients all the time, coping is for the moment. And any coping skill that kind of gets you from day to day has an expiration date if you don't actually address the root problem. And so, yes, the longer you put your body under that stress of maintaining anxiety, maintaining negative emotions without ever resolving them, it does wear us out. It does wear us out.
That's good. Okay. Well, thanks, Jenna, so much for spending time with us and for going through this. I hope it's been helpful for you guys out there. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll see you next time.